Deep in the ocean, an orca pod is on the hunt. But these aren't your average orcas. These guys are organized.
Marketing team, did you get those social media posts scheduled for the seal migration?
Aye, aye, Captain. We even have an automated notification for all pod managers when they go live.
They use Monday.com to keep their teamwork sharp, their communication clear, and their goals in sight. Monday.com, for whatever you run, even orcas. Go to Monday.com to dive deeper.
What's new from Apple? There's the new iPhone 16 Pro, built for Apple Intelligence. And it comes with the all-new camera control, giving you an easier way to quickly access your camera tools. The new Apple Watch Series 10 has our biggest display and our thinnest design ever. And this? It's the sound of active noise cancellation, now available on one of two new AirPods 4 models. So quiet. Check out all of the new products and new features at Apple.com. You can even buy yourself something new. See Apple.com for product availability updates. Apple Intelligence coming this fall.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Old Man. The hit show returns, starring Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow. The former CIA agent sets off on his most important mission to date, to recover his daughter after she's kidnapped. The stakes get higher and more secrets are uncovered. FX's The Old Man, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, welcome to a new episode of the New Books Network. I'm your host, Eleonora Mattiacci. I'm an associate professor of political science at Amherst College. Today, I'm here with Christian Bueger, co-author, together with Timothy Edmonds, of the book Understanding Maritime Security. The book was published in 2024 by Oxford University Press. Welcome, Christian.
Pleasure to be here.
Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yes, I'm a professor of international relations at the University of Copenhagen. And in Copenhagen, I also lead a research group on ocean infrastructures. So over the years, I've developed this passion for the oceans and the politics and governance that goes on. And I'm also one of the directors of the Safe Seas Network for Maritime Security.
So what is maritime security and why did you decide to write a book on it?
So maritime security is basically a very specific way of how to discuss the diverse security challenges at sea. And many people instantly here think about navies and discussions on sea power, for instance, or they think about pirates, in particular the pirates of Somalia. But actually, the agenda of maritime security is much more broad, and there's quite a diverse range of challenges, and that includes illicit fishing, includes maritime pollution, but also threats from non-state actors. In particular, the Houthis off the coast of Yemen have seen a lot of attention recently because they are attacking shipping in the Red Sea. So these are the challenges that maritime security is dealing with. And overall, it's quite a complex field of international security that involves different agencies, international organizations, and these really have to work together. And dealing with this complexity and developing strategies and solutions for this complexity is exactly the purpose of our book. So the main motive is to connect the dots, basically, across military, crime, environment, law, different agencies, and then also provide the readers with some guidance on how to deal with that complexity and how to analyze maritime security. And what lies in the background is basically almost a decade of scholarship on maritime security. And the book is basically trying to summarize that. And when my co-author Tim Edmonds and I started this writing journey, much of our work had been published only in different articles. And there was really no single go-to resource for people that want to learn about the essence of maritime security and also how it matters and how we can understand it. So that was really, really the driver of that book.
That's very interesting. So how should we study maritime security?
Well, Maritime security is still a relatively recent security discussion, but it is studied in quite different ways. Much of the debates are in international law, actually, where scholars then are interested in the law of the sea and how to apply it. One of the things that we're trying to do in the book is basically to outline a series of concise frameworks of what one needs to know about the debates, including in international law, but also security studies, development studies, geography, and so on. And then also provide a little bit of guidance of how one can use these frameworks. Because part of the point is, however we approach the question of maritime security, each of these frameworks has particular advantages, but also particular limits to understanding security at sea. Just to give one example, legal analysis, for instance, are really important to understand what the rules are for the sea and what you can do or what you should do at sea. But at the same time, they very often just assume that everyone actually is following the law. And they tend to ignore that there are many implementation challenges. And for legal analysis in particular, there's often an optimal solution. Well, in practice, that actually hardly ever exists. So this is one example of the advantages and weaknesses of a way of looking at maritime security. And what we're trying to do in the book is to run through a number of these frameworks. So we look into security studies and also the question of how issues are actually included within the maritime security agenda. But then there's, for instance, also a section that looks into the root causes. How do maritime security threats actually emerge? Where does piracy come from? Can we perhaps prevent it? So what are the causes and driver of these problems? So all of these are different ways, basically, of looking at maritime security. And as a good analyst, you try to combine what makes sense in a given circumstance. And it also highly depends on what your objectives are. What's the purpose of your reading and analysis?
So you mentioned the maritime security agenda. How did the maritime security agenda evolve over time?
Now, what is really interesting about the maritime security is that it basically is still a relatively recent agenda. And it's fascinating, actually, of how the problems that stand at the center of attention have changed over time. And in many ways, the discussion kicks off in the early 2000s. And that was basically a time when the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, known as UNCLOS, had just entered into force in 1994. And it was also a time where the United States were basically the guardians of the global oceans. They were this uncontested naval hegemon. But then following the terrorist attacks of September 11th, but also a series of violent incidents at sea, the first wave of maritime security basically emerged. And this first wave was fully focused on the problem of terrorism at sea. That changed quite fundamentally in the late 2000s, but early 2010s, where the emphasis shifted to piracy. And here it was basically the age of the pirates of Somalia that attacked hundreds of ships in the Gulf of Aden and the Western Indian Ocean. And a large international coalition was assembled, and they managed to actually stop piracy within a relatively short time span. So that is the second wave of the evolution of maritime security, so to say. And what followed after this period of piracy was basically that security policymakers increasingly recognized the full breadth of maritime security challenges. And that now included issues such as illegal migration, smuggling, the discussion on illicit fishing, different forms of crime, how they hang together. And several states and international organizations recognized at that point of time that they need a more consistent and comprehensive understanding of maritime security. And then states such as the United Kingdom, but also Spain, India, and the European Union, they all developed dedicated maritime security strategies for the first time, and also developed different types of coordination and governance structures. And the fourth wave then is basically characterized by this understanding that it's not enough if only a handful of states has good maritime security structures and capacities. It is a global challenge and it needs to be done on a global level. And that basically brought us a lot of capacity building, security assistance programs, with the idea that we need to help states worldwide to fight, for instance, transnational organized crime at sea, or what we call in the book, blue crimes. So it is a global challenge, and this basically characterizes the fourth wave, and it's now quite a prominent agenda worldwide, actually. So the book basically tells the story of this evolution and how maritime security became that complex field of international action.
That's very interesting. These four waves, and as you describe the waves, you mention several challenges to maritime security. Could you tell us more about those challenges? What are they?
So there's quite a set of challenges. Part of what is fascinating about maritime security is it's not easy. It's not a field that is easily to be approached. There's quite a series of threats and challenges that we discuss systematically in the book, and that includes interstate conflict, it includes terrorism, and different forms of blue crime, piracy, smuggling, environmental crimes, and so on. But actually, the two biggest challenges are, first of all, how to get all of these actors that potentially have a role in security at sea, and that literally stretches from fishery agencies, coast guards, navies, environmental regulators, but also the industry, the shipping industry, the oil and gas industry, the wind farm industry, and even the communications industry, because what we find in the sea are also the very, very important subsea data cables to which all of our internet basically runs. So getting all of these actors to act together is quite a challenge. Very often in governments, departments work in silos and they do not speak enough to each other, coordinate not well enough. And it's also in many ways an academic challenge that brings us back to the earlier discussion of frameworks, because very often lawyers do their own thing, security studies scholars do their own thing, geographers, development studies, and so on. So bringing all of these silos together, fostering the understanding for what the other one is doing, is arguably one of the big challenges. The second one I would outline is what basically happens since the 2000s is an increasing breakdown of the earlier consent or of what the rules of the sea are. And that is in particular linked to a phenomenon that is often called gray zone warfare. And that is basically practices which are not fully in the war spectrum, but should also not be seen as acceptable in peacetime. And a good example for that is, for instance, the Nord Stream pipeline attack of 2022, which was an incident where critical infrastructure at sea was sabotaged, but no one really knows whether it was a state-sponsored, whether it was a terrorist type of attack. And that really tells us that a lot is changing in terms of security at sea. The Houthi attacks in the Red Sea that we are seeing since last December that is threatening shipping is another example. It's for the first time that non-state actors violently attack shipping in a vital shipping lane. So it's another example for how we are seeing a lot more insecurity at sea emerging. And that quite obviously requires answers. And so this is the second challenge, so to say.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Old Man. The hit show returns, starring Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow. The former CIA agent sets off on his most important mission to date, to recover his daughter after she's kidnapped. The stakes get higher and more secrets are uncovered. FX's The Old Man, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Whoa, landing an account this big will totally change my landscaping business. It's going to mean hiring more guys and more equipment and new trucks for the new guys to drive the new equipment in. I don't know if I'm ready.
You can do this. And Ford Pro FinSimple can help. Our experts are ready to make growing pains less painful for your business with flexible financing solutions that meet the needs of your business today when you need them. Get started at FordPro.com/financing.
So you explained here the challenges. Tell us now more about the ways in which states and governance systems can address these challenges.
So in the book, we have two chapters that address that. And the first one basically looks at different actors. Who are the actors involved in maritime security? And it's by far my favorite chapter of the book. And it's also titled The Who is Who of Maritime Security. And there we are basically showing the different logics and the different interests that different types of actors have. Quite obviously, the military, for instance, is largely in charge for external security, while coast guards are more in charge for internal security, and so on. And getting these actors work together requires particular systems, or we have an entire chapter that calls it solutions to these maritime security challenges, getting beyond the silos. And as we show in this toolbox chapter, a first response are basically different coordination structures. That is getting actors work together on an everyday basis through committees, through centers, which are dedicated to maritime security, ensuring that there's actually a decent collaboration, both within states, but also in regional seas. The North Sea, the North Atlantic, the Indian Ocean, and so on. A very, very important tool for ensuring that every actor knows what to do in what kind of situation are maritime security strategies. Absolutely vital. Not all maritime security strategies have had the impact one might expect. So we basically show what kind of maritime security strategies work well in a given context and which ones tend to perform less well. And another component in all of this are information sharing initiatives. And these are known in the debate as maritime domain awareness or maritime situational awareness. And that is basically the idea that in order to fight these threats such as piracy, we need to have a better understanding of what happens out in the oceans. Let's not forget that the oceans are a wide and open space. There's not many people living out at sea. Some do on oil platforms and so on. And it is also a space that is very difficult in terms of its geophysical nature. There's many storms, there's a lot of movement, and so on. So it's actually much more difficult to know and understand what happens out at sea than it is on land. But this is absolutely vital. And many states, both on a national but also on a regional level, have developed quite sophisticated information sharing, but also information fusion initiatives to better understand what ships pass to the water, if there is activities which are a little bit shady, and then you can send out a Coast Guard vessel to inspect what is going on, but also to enhance the collaboration across states in regional waters. So if one ship does something shady in one national water and then moves on to another country's water, the security agencies work together. So it's a very, very important component. And then last but not least, yeah.
Before you go ahead, and sorry for interrupting, did I understand correctly? Do you use the word information sharing, of course, but also information fusing? Is that fusion?
Exactly. So the difference is basically one is just to pass on a bit of information, for instance, a ship location from one agency to the other. The idea of fusing the data is to put all the different types of data that have been collected by agencies into one common system. So that basically means that the fishery protection services know exactly the same things as the Coast Guard does, as those who are in charge for shipping do. So that's the idea of fusing. And since we are living in the age of artificial intelligence, the idea quite obviously is also to develop algorithms that could detect suspicious activities at sea, and then you could again send out a vessel to look what is going on there.
Thank you. I'm sorry for interrupting. You were saying?
My last point was coming to the solutions. What is very, very important also is to help states with weaker capacities to also provide maritime security. And that is usually being done in capacity building programs and technical assistance provisions. So, for instance, the United States Navy runs a lot of exercises with countries in Africa, but also Southeast Asia, to help them develop the skills and expertise for delivering maritime security and also protecting the marine environment.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for answering the question, and thank you for clarifying. I want to talk a little bit about something you write in the conclusions. Maritime security is increasingly becoming, quote, a core concern in international politics, end quote. Give us some examples of that.
So basically, if you look into the history of maritime security, it is quite amazing how this started out as a minor concern, a subset of the counterterrorism agenda, and then became a separate field of international security and has literally climbed up the agenda of security policy quite substantially. A good example for that is a UN Security Council debate that took place now 2 years ago, where basically prime ministers, ministers of defense were discussing in the UN Security Council of how to better ensure maritime security on a global level. And the Indian Prime Minister Modi was chairing the session. And I think it's a good example for how important maritime security is in the meantime. And there are dozens of UN Security Council debates on it. It's very high on the NATO or the European Union agenda. And there's also a particular reason for that, because what has happened over the last 20 years or so is that our dependency on the sea has fundamentally increased. So 95% of all global data transmissions happen through the sea, the subsea data cable network. 85% of shipping our sneakers, our electronic goods, and so on come to us through the sea. And also vast amount of energy is either transported through the sea, oil and gas, or sourced directly at sea and comes to us via pipelines. And if we're thinking about the green energy transition, much of that also happens out in the ocean. And here I'm thinking in particular about offshore wind parks, for instance, but also solar and floating solar panels. All of this is absolutely important. So our dependency on the sea has increased, and that also means that the vulnerability has increased. If the Panama Canal or the Suez Canal is shut down for various reasons, we all feel it. It leads to higher shipping costs, longer transport times, and so on. So this is literally in the background of all of this, that we are as dependent on the oceans as we have never been before in human history. Hence, this is why maritime security is so important.
I'm still recovering from that 95% that you just mentioned. I was not expecting that. When you describe blue crimes, you talk about pirates and smugglers. Those are sort of usual suspects, so to speak. But you also mention eco-criminals. Tell us more about those.
So the entire idea of blue crimes is basically to find a way to think about the different expressions of crime at sea in a systematic manner. And as you rightfully said, we often think about pirates, these young Somali boys that climb on board shipping vessels and then hold them hostage. Or we're thinking about smugglers of narcotics or wildlife or many, many other forms of contraband. What often doesn't get enough attention is that there's also a series of crimes where it's not directly people who are the object of harm. Very often, it is also marine biodiversity that gets damaged through criminal activities. And a prime example of that are illicit fishing activities. It's a problem globally. There's less and less fish. And because of that, fishing vessels move further and further out at sea. And a lot of it is illegal, or at least unregulated, and that's basically, it's a form of theft. It's stealing the resources of other nations and thereby destroying the marine environment, because then it doesn't become possible to regulate fish stocks and so on. So illicit fishing is one example. But another problem, for instance, are pollution crimes. And here we are talking about criminal gangs basically dumping waste at sea, but it is also these kind of like more small scale, deliberate dumping of plastic waste, deliberate dumping of chemicals. Let's not forget, it's very, very difficult to actually track what happens at sea, and it's much easier to hide and commit these kind of crimes. Why is that important? The oceans are already in a deep crisis. We are losing more and more biodiversity. The coral reefs are dying. And this is an additional stressor for the oceans. And let's not forget that a lot of people around the world actually depend on ocean resources for their livelihood. They eat fish. They earn their income from marine tourism and so on. So this is why we need to take these environmental crimes quite seriously, because a lot of people economically depend on a healthy ocean. And actually, if we're going to the entire climate discussion, we all depend on the oceans in one way or the other.
In an ecosystem sort of way. Yeah, makes sense. Okay.
Exactly.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
So pirates, smugglers, and eco-criminals. But what are some of the major emerging challenges to maritime security?
So quite obviously, maritime security is a moving agenda. This is why it's so fascinating to learn more about it and to study it. And there's three big new challenges that have come to the fore over the last 5 to 10 years, I would say. A big issue now is cybersecurity at sea. Shipping is becoming more and more automated. Navigation increasingly depends on digital means. And in the very near future, we will also see more and more autonomous vessels at sea. And that makes it really, really dangerous if these systems are being hacked, the navigation systems are spoofed and so on. It can lead to accidents. There have also been a series of ransomware attacks. So this is basically now the merger between cybersecurity and maritime security, and puzzling out how the cybersecurity people should work with the maritime security people is a big, big challenge. A second one is the implications of climate change. And as we all know, the climate crisis is already unfolding. It will imply more harsh weather conditions at sea. Harsher weather conditions means more accidents, for instance. That's something that Coast Guards need to respond to. Mm. But potentially, it will also mean new patterns of blue crime. So, for instance, if an island becomes uninhabited because of sea level rise, it might make a perfect spot for smuggling as a depot for narcotics and so on. So this is just one example of how climate change can lead to new forms of crime. So that's the second dimension or the second challenge. A third one, and this is what I'm quite passionate about at the moment, is the entire question of critical maritime infrastructure protection. In many ways, our dependency on the sea has to do with the infrastructures out there. The internet cables, the shipping industry, the energy platforms, and so on. And since the Nord Stream attacks, these deliberate acts of sabotage of a pipeline, we really need to start thinking about how we protect these infrastructures at sea better from criminals, but also potentially from state adversaries. Again, as the case of Nord Stream highlights, we do not really know who did it, and probably we will never know. But it's an urgent and quite pressing issue how to deal with that.
Again, because we are increasingly dependent on things that happen on the sea, on the seas. Is there anything that did not make it into the book that you would like to share with us?
Well, it's always time passes on, and once you have done finished a piece of analysis, new things come to the fore. Mm-hmm. So we finished the book actually in October last year, in 2023, and when we were running through the last version of the book, that was in December. The Houthi attacks in the Red Sea just started. And we were thinking deeply, what are we going to do now? We recognize this is an important new development. Are we now going to wait and see what happens? Does it change our analysis? And we decided, no, it does not. But clearly, there's not a full-fledged analysis of the problem in the book. Although we mentioned the Houthi rebels many, many times. So I wish to add an extra chapter that would provide a careful analysis of this. Another issue is the critical maritime infrastructure protection agenda. I would say now today is much, much more important for the future of maritime security than it is presented in the book. We have a long discussion in the last chapter of what it might mean, and we also discuss Nord Stream and so on. But today I actually think it would deserve an entire chapter on it, because it's so, so important now as the future of maritime security that will be a game changer in many ways. So these are some of the examples then of what is not fully in the book, but time passes on and there's always another book to be written.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've taken indeed enough of your time. And speaking of another book to write, what are you working on right now?
So it is indeed the critical maritime infrastructure protection agenda that keeps me busy at the moment. We have a wonderful project right now looking at the consequences of the green transition for maritime security. And there we are looking at the North Sea in close detail because it's in many ways a paradigmatic region. So this is fascinating ongoing work. I've also started to work on a new book with my team in Copenhagen, and this will be a fascinating manuscript as well, because we are looking at global ocean politics more broadly. So the ocean overall, and look at how maritime security hangs together with the blue economy, but also environmental protection and so on. So this will keep me busy over the next year or so. And then hopefully we can have another conversation in the future about the forthcoming book.
Absolutely. We would love to have you. And those topics sound very poignant and very interesting. Thank you so much for talking to us today. My guest has been Christian Bueger, co-author of the book Understanding Maritime Security. The book was published in 2024 by Oxford University Press. I'm your host, Eleonora Mattiacci. Until next time.